Hey, Gore friends, this is Story.
And Mars.
And we're back with another episode, and this week was Mars's pick. So Mars, tell the good folk what you picked for this week, please.
Identity.
Identity.
Who am I?
Who are we? We are Gore friends, and we are one. Friends.
Yeah, we definitely don't have identity problems, so, you know.
Who are you people? Stay tuned. And welcome back, Gore friends. So as we stated previously, we are going to be covering Identity. Mars, why did you choose this film?
I feel like we haven't done a lot of thrillers on the show, and I think this is a pretty good thriller / slasher. I think I consider it kind of a slasher. But yeah, it has a lot of twists and turns. I think it's very underrated. Like, people don't talk about Identity at all. Like, I ended up watching this with a member of the Gore Gang, and it was his first time watching it. So yeah, I think it's underrated, and I think people need to go out there and, you know, go see it.
Just get out there and give it 110%, Gore Gang.
That's all I ask.
So I agree. I haven't actually heard of a lot of people talking about this movie, but it's a fun watch. And it's surprisingly a little campy for a Mars pick. So I'm excited to get into it. For those of you that don't know what this movie is about, if you have absolutely no idea, that's too damn bad. I'm gonna give you all the spoilers so you will walk away from this having lived Identity.
Pretty much, okay? Yeah.
So here we go. Stranded at a desolate Nevada motel during a nasty rainstorm, 10 strangers become acquainted with each other when they realize that they're being killed off one by one. So, Identity was released in 2003. The director is James Mangold. What a name, am I right? And the writer is Michael Cooney. Okay, and it stars quite a few people. Mars was like, are you really gonna write down all the people that are in this movie? And I was like, by golly, I'm a try. No, I did not succeed in writing down all the people in this movie, but I have some important people to mention. So we have John Cusack as Ed. He's baby daddy for the movie, so keep him in mind. He is important. Ed is important, okay? Ray Liotta, he's a great actor playing Rhodes. We have Amanda Peet as Paris. John Hawks is Larry. I freaking hate Larry.
I love Larry.
Remember that. Okay. You guys keep in mind Ed and Larry because we're gonna discuss. Clea Duvall as Jenny. She's played in so many things, Girl Interrupted and
Faculty.
But I'm a Cheerleader.
The director also.
Have you seen that movie, But I'm a Cheerleader? Mm-mm. Nobody talks about that.
The director of this also did Girl Interrupted too.
See, there we go.
Connections.
There we go. Girl Interrupted. I love that movie. But also, you guys, But I'm a Cheerleader is freaking hilarious. And you should watch it. RuPaul is in it. It's just Dante Basco. It's a good time. It's a good time. William Lee Scott as Lou. John C. McGinley as George. And we have Pruitt Taylor Vince as Malcolm Rivers, whose head we are inside currently. So welcome to the world of Malcolm Rivers. So let's get into it. What did you find funny, Mars?
Funny. Basically, mostly Lou. It's mostly Lou and not Lou, Larry and the convict's name, who is in the
The Frighteners.
Frighteners, yes. I was watching and I was like, we covered him before and I don't remember what it is. Yes.
He is creepy.
He is very creepy.
I can't believe did I write down his name? I don't even know whose names I wrote down. All I know is Ed and Larry. Gotta remember them. Okay.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, he has a funny part where he's like with Larry and he's like tied up to the chair and he's like, what you got in the fridge there? What's in there?
I wrote that down too. What's in the fridge? He said it like, you like Krabby Patties, don't you, Squidward?
What's in there?
What's in the fridge, Lair? Larry?
What's
in the fridge?
I laughed because he's very punchable and Rhodes punches him a few times in the movie.
His smile is so haunting.
It is. Yeah. So that's a funny line I got. And then everything else is with Larry. First of all, I just wrote Larry so extra. He's just ridiculous. So when we first get people coming to the hotel and this actress, who's a whole other story, the actress comes to get a room and he looks at her ID. He's like, didn't she used to be that actress? And I was like, ooh, mm-mm. That hurt.
You don't say that. You don't say that.
No. And she, because she was very like arrogant and very annoying, very Hollywood, and just thought she was all that and a bag of chips. And that kind of brought her down a notch, I hope. So I thought that was funny. And then Larry, when he just like totally ignores Paris because she is an escort.
But it's like, how did he know? She was dressed any differently.
Mini skirt. She was wearing a mini skirt and a hoodie. Like, what?
What? How does that scream escort? She didn't have like a face full of makeup. She was just pretty. That's it. Like, she just had a nice face naturally.
He instantly knew. And he's like, is she a hooker? I was like, Larry. So, like, when Paris is trying to check in, and then he's like, we don't charge by the hour. I'm like, okay, you got jokes.
And then she changed into jeans. Like, she wasn't even jeans and a hoodie with a jacket. Yeah, like.
He was going after Paris.
And then they'd be like, oh, and then the patriarchy wanted to tell us it's the way we dress. Lord, I was so mad at Larry.
So Larry does that. And then the last thing he's just like, when Paris calls him out, she was like, I was just looking at you. I was just talking to you. Can you look at me? And then he was just like, I don't look at trash. I was like, Larry, you are not, you know, all that in a bag of chips. You need to calm down, Larry. So that was funny. And then just when Larry just gets picked on and just like everyone accuses him for murder, he just goes hype. And it's just funny. He's my favorite. I think he's like the funny. I think I laughed the most at his lines specifically. Him and the convict. Other than that, those are the main ones that I have, I think, so far, I think, for funny.
I have a few to add.
Yes.
Yes. So, I can't remember who said it. I feel like it's probably a Rhodes line, though. But somebody said, oh, no, it was the judge. Okay. Backstory, you guys. So they're all inside of the head of Malcolm Rivers. Spoiler, right? Mm-hmm. He's on death row. He's about to be sentenced to death in 24 hours, right? So there's a little mini trial happening, super impromptu, last minute, during a storm. The judge comes in. He's mad because he's like, This is so inconvenient, basically.
Yeah, and
he's
like,
this guy is crazy. He's killed people and he's sentenced to death tomorrow. Now I gotta sit here and listen to you guys instead of being at home. Mm-hmm. There's a storm. He is livid. Mm-hmm. So he comes in and he's like, you know what time it is? Think I got time for bullshit.
I laughed too at that. I laughed. Real it's just how talk. He delivers I it. Mean, it's how he delivers
the whole time. He is so sassy because he is like, I don't want to be here right now. And that's real. Can you imagine being at home? You already did the work you're supposed to do and you get a call like, oh, gotta talk about that project again. Why? In a storm. Why? He was not having it today. So then I was laughing at Larry did make me laugh a couple times. I hate to admit it. But when they opened with the Wheel of Fortune, he was watching Wheel of Fortune and he was yelling at the TV.
Yep.
It was like, buy a value, idiot. I was like, yo, like that's a little relatable. That's a little relatable. Especially back in the early 2000s. And I feel like game shows are a bit more prominent mm-hmm. than they are mm-hmm. today. That's what everybody was doing with their Saturday night, I think. Yep. Then Larry was upset with like the convict like being there, and he's like he said this is gonna go in my FFs too, but he said okay, they're like, so I had a con that I was transporting, and Larry's like, who escaped? Now he's just out there running around free.
Oh, I forgot about that. You know, he's like, fucking running free. It's like
running free.
And then they were like, oh, the actress that I was transporting died. He's like, we can't find the body. And he's like, not the rest of it anyway. It's like, shut up.
His ad-libs are so unnecessary, but it was just running around free that did it for me. I was like, yeah. Okay, he's not a chicken, like just running around free.
Oh my god.
And then I don't know why I felt like I didn't know where to put this, so I said, I guess in funny, but when Ed was going in the laundry room and he kept opening dryers, it bothered me that he left them open, because it's like, it's a storm. People are trying to get warm, dry clothes, and you're just opening. They spent their quarters already. Mm-hmm. They can't get that back. You're just opening dryers and leaving them open. Never close the dryers back.
Didn't close it.
And I was like, close the dryers, Ed. Why are you doing that to people? What did they do to you? So I didn't know where to put it, but I don't know why that bothered me so much. Ed didn't close the dryers. And of course, the what's in the fridge scene was just hilarious. What did you find cool?
Quite a few things cool. Like we mentioned, this is a psychological thriller, so there's lots. It's like a psychological thriller / slasher. Like I said, some people are getting popped off and like there's all this is happening in his head. I like the use of rain, first of all, because you set the tone off in the beginning. You're learning about Malcolm's trial and stuff, and it's raining, and you cut to the motel, and it's raining. So you kind of get the idea that this is all in the same universe subconsciously, which is very, very clever creatively. And it's raining the same amount. It's not like, oh, it's sprinkling in real life and it's coming down in the motel. Like all of it's kind of a huge, big storm. So it's very consistent, and it kind of makes you think you're in the same universe. Use of flashbacks. Flashbacks, butterfly effect, it happens a lot, at least in the very beginning. You get like at least like 3 flashbacks at least to kind of see how everyone got there. So you get the family walking into the hotel and walking to the motel, and then the mom is like hurt, like really hurt, and you're like, oh, what happened? They flashback to them hitting over this heel, and you're like, oh, where'd the heel come from? Flashback to Amanda, not Amanda, that's her real name, Paris. Losing her shoe. So low-key it's kind of her fault, but you know, it's all right. It was an accident. Didn't happen on purpose. So you kind of get that flashback. And then you get a flashback. She's like, oh, looking for her lighter. And you flashback to her being a prostitute. And you're like, oh, okay. You get a little backstory with that as well as her knowing where her lighter is. And it all comes back to the mom getting hit with the car And you're like, okay, whose car is that? Flashback to. So it's a lot of cutting back and forth, and I really like it when movies do that. But it's not done in a confusing way at all. I think it's very like straightforward, quick, simple. And I think it's kind of hard to do that. Like some psychological movies can kind of go overboard, where it's just like hard to follow, like, you know, Inception or Interstellar, where it's like, okay, my brain is too boomer brain for this. But I think it's the perfect amount of twists and turns and flashbacks for this. Speaking of twists and turns, loved all twists and turns in this movie. Like, if it's your first, like, watching it with someone who'd never seen it before, it's really fun because you're just like, what the hell is happening? Like, once the bodies start disappearing, it's like, what is going on here? The first kind of red flag that happens is when the convict, he escapes from the toilet and he runs away and he sees, like, a building in the distance and he starts running towards it and he runs towards it and it's the same hotel and he's like, why is this happening? So stuff like that, the everything, all the bodies disappearing, and then the little the keychain thing, the key tabs, like the hotel keys, mm-hmm. Popping up, like that was really cool. You're like, how is that even happening? Like, no one knew that guy, like some of these deaths were accidents, some of them were on purpose, but everyone kind of has that same little hotel key by their side. So yeah, I really enjoyed the twists and turns. If you guys are interested in knowing, this is just because, if you guys are interested in knowing what the chances are of 10 people having the same birthday, all being in the same place, that is 1 in 115 sextillion. Didn't know sextillion was a word or number.
Yeah.
Apparently that's a thing. So that's very, 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 very rare odds. So yeah, I also liked all the similarities. Like everyone's connections, because you're like, okay, what's, because they, Jenny kind of brings that up. So, okay, maybe we all have something in common. Like, what's the deal? And then once they like, you know, start unraveling things and, you know, it all kind of comes forward with everyone having the same, like everyone having the same birthday, everyone's last name being named after states. It's really cool. And also I want to mention that I really appreciate them having the twist 3/4 in and not at the end. I mean, they have 2 big twists, and I appreciate the us finding out about the Malcolm connection 3/4 in, instead of having that be at the very end, because you're like, okay, it makes sense now. Okay, we can move forward and do this thing. And then the last thing I have is the burial ground red herring, because she brings it up like twice, and Jenny is kind of very adamant, and that's her theory about the whole thing. So I like that kind of red herring, because you're like, okay, this is pretty supernatural. Like, what's going on here? But of course, that isn't the case. And that being said, I think that's all I have for cool.
You had some great stuff listed there.
Oh, thank
you. I just have a couple of things to add. One being the opening monologue, which is a poem about I saw a man on the stairs, a man that wasn't there. And I thought that was so trippy, but it perfectly describes like a schizophrenia or a dissociative personality disorder where you know, you might hallucinate or remember things that didn't happen. And I thought that was, the fact that they kept repeating that throughout the movie was really neat. Also, I like that the opening photos and you know, there's like a bit of a montage of like going through files exposition. And photos. Yeah, and it was just setting up the story really well. Right away, you know, you're dealing with a mental health patient and you don't know where it's going to go. You know that he killed people. So this whole time you're thinking, okay, there's an actual killer at the motel killing people. But then at the same time, it's like, but this doesn't make sense. I also enjoyed that most of the movie was in a storm. Like, that's really hard to do, shooting the bulk of your movie in a rainstorm. Like, the whole thing, it's almost like you're watching it go down in real time and you're just sitting there going through this night with them. because they don't really do time jumps and things. Like, everything is pretty, it's happening pretty fast over the course of the night. And so I appreciate that they're able to shoot a whole movie in the rain. And a lot of the actors actually did get sick and had a cold as a result from it, because they used actual cold rain effects. And a lot of it took place on a Sony sound stage. So I thought that was interesting, how they basically just used one location.
Love one location movies.
Yeah. They obviously had a different location for the interior scenes for Malcolm and his trial, but everything else is just literally at that sound stage on that Sony, in the Sony studio. So I thought that was really cool. I also appreciate the names being, you know, everyone being named after states and how everyone shares a birthday, things like that. It makes it more believable that they're all made up. And I thought a really cool moment was, it almost seemed like Ed knew that they weren't real. Like, he had a moment of realization before even kind of coming through and taking over Malcolm during the trial. It seemed like he was already in the process of figuring that out for himself. And that's how he was able to accept it a little easier. Of course, he still had some shock when he saw his face, which I think the acting was really great with that. Whole scene, which I'll get into later, but he accepted it, though. You know, it's like he was already on the path to that when he was looking at people's last names, and he was like, we're all named after states, and all of our birthdays are on the same day, and bodies are disappearing, and it's like, what else can it be, other than something supernatural? I'd be like, yo, are we real, you guys? Like, that's some existential stuff going on. I think that was actually part of the trigger of him, like, coming through and being like, yeah, we're at a motel and, you know, taking over Malcolm again. So I thought that whole thing was really cool, because Ed is just a really cool cop. Really good cop, I mean. And last but not least, I appreciate movies that explore dissociative personality disorder. Split did it as well,
It gets a lot of slack, though, like, from people that actually have it. Like, people are very, like, with, Split specifically. Like, people really criticize that movie because of its portrayal of it and, you know, United States of Terror, stuff like that. Like, people get really sensitive. They're like, you're making it kind of, like, I guess, extra than what it is specifically. Like, you're saying these people can become monsters and stuff like that. I understand their case. It's very interesting. But yeah. I like that subgenre in, you know, psychological movies and horror and stuff like that, when it delves into that as well.
For sure. The reason why I appreciate it is because, the reason why I find it so fascinating is the exploration of, you know, becoming a completely different person that has nothing to do with the other personalities that inhabit that body is so fascinating to me. And the fact that they can learn things as one personality that another doesn't know. So the fact that Ed knew Spanish, he was fluent in Spanish, and there are times where Malcolm, you didn't know if he was Ed at the time or not, but in the beginning, during the opening credits, he was speaking a little Spanish Yeah, and then when Ed was telling his story about why he stopped being a cop and he had to talk to a girl in Spanish, because I was like, why did he have to point out that she was Mexican? Like, what was the purpose of that? And then it brought up that he was the one talking. I assume he was the one talking her down because he spoke Spanish and he was, like, saying what she was saying in Spanish. And I was like, oh. So that's pretty, you know, fascinating that someone that probably never spoke a lick of Spanish in their lives could know Spanish because of one of their personalities and not be able to tap into that. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating. I don't know. But yeah, that's all I've got to say on that. Let's get into scary. What did you find scary, Mar?
Scary. It being a psychological thriller, you're not gonna get like jump scares. It's more of like an edge of your seat type movie. It's not like, oh, I'm scared, I'm gonna cover my eyes type situation. So that being said, there is a jump scare I want to mention. When Tim's mom gets ran over, that's a pretty decent jump scare. Like, she, you know, the dad is fixing the car and she goes up to Tim, puts her hand up to the mirror, and he puts his hand, well, Tim puts his hand up first, and that makes her go up and put her hand up to him, and he backs away, then she backs away, and then she gets hit, and it comes very abruptly, although you probably know what's going to happen because of how it's set up, but it's just very jarring, so I think that's a pretty good jump scare, and then when Jenny's in the bathroom, and Lou is, like, you know, having this moment, that lock was super strong, can we talk about that? I was like, how's this door staying up?
That's the lock that Mindy needed in The Shining.
Yep. Straight up. I was like, how is this so strong? Is that little, tiny little thing just like hanging in there? But yeah, that scene is pretty scary because if you listen very closely, you can hear Lou saying, what are you doing here? So you know it's someone that Lou knows and sees. And he's like, what are you doing here? And then he gets popped. I'm like, why are you not screaming who it is? Like, he's like, Jenny, it's Tim. Tim is hurting me. Like, say something. Why are you keeping it a secret? So, yeah, that was intense. I think that's a scary situation, being in Jenny's shoes. And also I just want to talk about real quick, I thought it was funny, their whole little backstory, like they got married because she said she was pregnant, and then I'm like, we're not
oh
in,
yeah
like,
I should have put that in my funny.
We're not in the 50s, my dude, like, why are you guys getting married just because she's pregnant? Like,
no, a lot of people do that just because they want like the experience of having a family unit, and they feel like marriage just solidifies that, and it shows like, hey, I'm committed to you, I'm gonna be here. And so,
but they seem very toxic though, like the relationship wasn't a
but
thing.
people think that babies fix things, and it's just like, especially because a lot of men, if they grew up without a father figure, they feel the need to not do that sometimes. Yeah. That's not always the case, unfortunately. But they just feel this moral obligation to like be there. It's the same reason why people stay in toxic marriages.
No,
you know, they're like,
and I'm like, that's just damaging the kid in the long run. Like, it don't do it, you guys. I mean, I'm not a...
Yeah, sometimes people just get more infatuated with the idea of like, oh wow, we're gonna be parents, and then it creates this veil of infatuation. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh my gosh, we
with
should get married for in love.
I don't think that was when Jenny and Lou, I don't know, like they just, it was just a hot mess, and she was like, why did you lie about it? And she was like, because so-and-so saw you at the Hawk with that girl. And I'm like, okay, we're doing
it. And he said, what are we, 15?
Oh my god, my brain was gonna explode. But yeah, anyways, that scene
the
was
Hawk. What is the Hawk? I want to go
some kind
there.
Of meetup. Yeah, me too. I was like, what is that place? Anyways, yeah, so Luke getting murked was pretty intense. And that's pretty much it. It's not, like I said, it's not a jump scare type movie. It's just you having this experience with them during the night.
Mm-hmm. Is that all of your scaries?
Yeah, nothing really.
Scary.
Nothing really came out.
I did write down the Timothy. I know his name is Timothy. I keep calling him Timmy. Is it Timmy or Timothy? Timmy. What do they call him? Tim. Okay. All right, well, little Timmy's mom got hit by a car, and that scared me. And just, like, what he must have been going through is kind of creepy. Let's see, the whole idea of, like, a killer kid, you know, kids are creepy. They have a way of getting to me, Mars. They have a way of getting
under my skin. And Tim doesn't say anything, by the way. Like, he doesn't
say anything at all.
Except at the end of the movie. Yeah, he's very quiet.
Yep. The con dude creeps me out. His smile is just haunting. It's just, in the Fright News, I hated that smile. He's done, like, an episode of a crime show, I think, and he had that same creepy smile. He beat instincts. Oh, you know, he was in Stranger Things, the last season of Stranger Things, too. And I was like, that fool right there. That fool right there, smiling, same smile, talking to Nancy. Oh my God, I was like, man.
I hate this guy.
Hate that guy, but I love him because he's a good actor.
Yeah.
He has nice teeth, but man, that smile is haunting. That's pretty much all I have. I mean, it's, for me, it was like the situation of it all was terrific. Yeah. It reminded me of that episode of The Twilight Zone where they were all stuck in a diner and one of them was an alien.
Yeah.
And they didn't know who. Same concept, except pretty much everyone dies this time around, spoiler. So I was like, man, I would hate for that to happen. Like, can you imagine driving home from Vegas and there's this horrible, horrible storm, you're stuck, you're like, everyone's car got out of commission somehow, some way, and they're just stuck in this motel with strangers, and a cop brings a con man, and you know, he's wanted for multiple homicide, and you know, it's just,
yeah,
it's too much. It's like,
to figure out your whole life was a lie.
Yeah,
you're not real.
That's
bad and scary.
Which I think about anyway, and you know, I'd be like, you know, whoever. I used to, when I was a kid, there was a narrator in my head that, and everything I did was being narrated like a storybook. I'm like, I'm in a children's book right now. This is my life. And whoever's writing it is a horrible, horrible person.
Can we talk about Rhodes too and how he just finessed his way as a cop? Like, I was like,
yeah, also another red herring, now that you brought up Rhodes finessing himself as a cop, that bullet wound in his back, I was like, what happened there? Like, they just did a shot of him putting his jacket on, and he had, like, a red bullet or wound. He had a bleeding wound in his back. I'm like, okay, that's alarming. How did that happen? Why isn't he acting like he's hurt? And it takes literally most of the movie for you to find out. But it's so satisfying when you do. But yeah, he just finessed himself.
Yeah.
Good acting. Because he had to play a criminal that was a good actor. That's acting inception right there. That's crazy. Let's get into, speaking of acting, visuals and acting, Mars, what did you think about those things?
Acting-wise, we have a lot of well-known people, like we said, John Cusack, Ray Liotta, Amanda Peet, like, a lot of well-known people, even the guy who played, Larry, like, he's been in a few things as well. Really great, strong cast for sure. The guy that's in freaking Scrubs, who plays the dad, he's in Scrubs, so really great cast. And then specifically, I wanted to add, I love a good monologue, and there's a couple of good ones in here. We have one with Ed talking about why he quit, and like you said, with the Mexican girl, that's a whole monologue where he's like taking photos of crime scene, and he's just talking to Paris about what he used to do for work, and I think that's a really great monologue. I wouldn't be surprised if they use that in his audition. And then I really liked Larry's monologue as well, when he's talking about how he got across the motel and found the guy dead and how he just stayed. I think that was a really great monologue as well. I know you don't like Larry, but you know.
The actor is okay, I guess, but his character get on my nerves, man.
Yeah, so I really did appreciate the acting in this. And then even, what's his name? The guy whose head we're in right now. Well, not right now in the movie, of course.
Malcolm Truett, Taylor Vince.
His shaky eyes. We're not gonna talk about his shaky eyes. I was like, how do you do that? Like, that's why you got cast. It's like, oh, that guy with the shaky eyes. Yep. That just adds to you looking not stable. And I think that was a great directing choice for them to have him do that. And then as for visuals, nothing that really like blew me away. Everything takes place in the rain, and just like you said, it's difficult to shoot a whole thing in the rain, like in a storm. So I think I give them props for that, for it to look really nice in the rain. It's a pretty like dark movie. Like it takes place at night. But yeah, nothing really to say about visuals otherwise. Sorry. Ed in the chair, you kind of mentioned it, but when Ed comes through and he's sitting in the chair with the people for the trial, the editing for that, I really like them cutting between him and Malcolm back and forth. And he's like, what happened to my face? And they give him the mirror and he's like freaking out. And I really like that scene in regards to acting and visuals at the same time.
Okay. Those are all great things. I enjoyed just one thing you didn't mention, the cutaways. You kind of mentioned it earlier with them having flashbacks, but the way they did the cutaways is what made it feel campy, because it was slowed down to almost like a freeze frame, and then they cut away to show like backstory, and I was like, yo, that feels campy AF. Like, I'm getting Sleepaway Camp vibes in 2003. So I was like, yeah, I kind of dig it though, because you always knew when it was coming. Like, but after it wasn't the first cringy. Time, yeah, it wasn't cringy. It was just like after the first time, it's like, oh, here some comes. Information is coming. Yep. We're getting some backstory, little depth. Yep. I also enjoy, you know, the cutaways for the purpose of, you know, adding that depth to the story, but the way they did it was really unusual, because it wasn't like a smooth transition. Like I said, it was almost like a freeze frame, and then they go back, and
time, like, it keeps the movie from going being too long. Like, it's a pretty short movie, if I remember correct. It's probably like 90 minutes. It's not,
yeah, it's a pretty standard feature, yeah, time,
yeah. So just like having those quick cutaways, just cut stuff, you won't have to have this be a 2-hour movie. So I appreciate that,
yeah, for sure. And of course the acting was great. Ray Liotta is just a great chef's actor. I love John Cusack.
He's Bay, and I had a huge crush on him in this movie.
I had a crush on him in this, and he also portrayed Edgar Allan Poe in the movie The Raven, and he did a great, he played a similar role in that as he did in this one.
I need to watch The Raven.
Edgar Allan Poe is just like this man of mystery, and the way he portrayed him is great, and watching this kind of took me back to that, and it made me want to rewatch it, because that's also a murder mystery movie slash thriller. So it was just, it's always fun to see John Cusack in those kind of he does a really great job at being sad, at being like a tormented soul.
I just want to watch more movies of his, like when I was watching it with the Gore Gang member, he hadn't seen Stand By Me. I was like, I like him in Stand By Me too. Like, it's short, but he's like, he's very versatile. He can be very happy and like the boy next door, or he can be very tormented. So
exactly. And this is one of those movies where he had to be that man of mystery with the tormented soul.
And I was vibing with it.
He's so knowledgeable about things, but he's just so sad and faced such darkness. And like,
be sad with me.
Like, let's get some tissue and cry it out together.
Yes.
So I guess you see what our type is, right, Gordon? Oh, he's so sad.
Yes.
Tormented. And what's with his past? Oh, I hope he opens up to me.
Yep.
But who knows, if he doesn't, it's okay. Like,
dreams, goals.
John Cusack, if you're listening, please.
Call me. Story's taken, but call me.
Okay, look. I gotta have a celeb freebie, okay? At least one. Like, John, if you out there, bro. Just don't be yourself. Just be that sad, tormented soul that we love so much.
Jesus.
Give me that man of mystery that's experienced loss, that... Can if I, you know what was the really hot point of this movie? Was when he said, in that moment, I couldn't find one optimistic thing to say. Mm-hmm. That's hot right there. Because that's real. That's human. Like, mm-hmm. not everything is happy hunky-dory all the time. He was like, you know, for one second, I just couldn't think of one optimistic thing to say.
And then when he held her and he was like, it's going to be okay. I was like, yes, hold me. Yeah. It's going to be okay. Yeah.
And it's okay. Like, he didn't even really believe that, but
nope.
He said it.
Nope, he said it.
It's like, but you could feel that a part of him didn't believe it. And that's where the attraction is for me.
Oh my God.
Let's be emo together. Let's get into where did they F up, Maz? Don't know why I said it like that, but there it is. It happened. I can't retract it.
Genesis F up. Just let Malcolm get executed. Like, we just don't, you know. Actually, I'm not a huge fan of the death penalty. Fun fact about myself, I'm not for it, really. But, you know, for the sake of the movie, you know, just cut it out. It's 24 hours before. Just let it go. Oh, my God. Like, from outside looking in, if we were the psychologists or whatever, how can you be perfectly clear that everyone is dead? Like, how do you know? You're not there. You're not in his brain. Like, you don't know if Timmy made it out or not. Like, how do you know? How do you know? So that's why I'm just like, you know, just execute. Let's just cut it out. That's an F up. And then, you know, just pull over to get your stuff, Paris. Pull over to get your lighter. Like, don't do that, because then she did that. Her luggage fell open. Her shoe fell out. And it's like, just pull over, you guys. How about we just don't smoke? Don't smoke and
try. Right.
Won't need a lighter, you won't need to blow in your bag, just don't smoke, let's just call it there, just do that. And then why wasn't everyone really concerned after Timmy left his mom's room and she was dead? I'm like, I mean, that is, it could be a coincidence, but I was like, that's kind of sus,
but though. With, like, the key being there, like, who exactly else could have put, like, the key there?
I was like, okay, so it just popped up and Tim was literally the only one here. Okay. So yeah, I think that was an F up, not questioning Tim. And the fact that they didn't literally, I forgot what their reasoning was, but Rhodes actually had a good idea. He said, we all just sit in this room and look at each other and we do not move. And for some reason, something initiates where they have to leave the room. But I thought that was a great idea from jump. I was like, let's just stay still, look at each other, mm-hmm. and don't move.
The only thing that triggered them to leave the room was Timmy going in the room to see his mom.
Oh, and then they saw and the dad, and they saw got the freaked key. Out. Got it.
Yep. And then they're like, how the hell? And then they started mm-hmm. talking about, like, mm-hmm. the birthdays and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and that, and then that's when the lights, like, started.
That's really great writing. Can I just point that out? The writing for this movie, the writer actually hasn't done anything else really notable, which surprises me much, because that takes a lot of planning as a writer. I'm not a huge writer.
That takes a lot out of you.
Yeah, you have to literally plan every step.
Is all you need to feel like, okay, I can die
now. I can die in peace. But story as a writer, I know you can probably say, like, that probably took a lot of effort and planning to really, like, plan out every second. Like, how are we going to get them out of the situation? How are we going to move them forward as characters and stuff? So I thought
that was a good idea. Because I was really thinking about that. I was like, how did they get out of the room? And yeah, that kind of triggered it. So, but that's, yeah, I think, man, that's all of my F ups that I have, just offhand. That's just off the dome.
I got some F ups. I got some F ups.
Yes.
Pick me, pick me. So, Larry being a douche, it didn't help build his case any. Him just having, and you know, he had this this thing about him that reminded me of old dude from Hunchback, Furlough.
Oh my god.
He reminded me of him because he had all those dirty magazines that he was like, oh, I hate cheap whores. There's just something about cheap whores, and literally held a knife to her throat. Yep. And wanted people to believe that he wasn't crazy and killing people. It's like, bro, you're stupid. Like, I can't with him. Also, I did kind of want some backstory to why he was so anti-woman of the night. Like, why?
I think because
did he have a personal vendetta against?
Because that's how what's his name? The person who were in head were in, basically. That's how he feels towards, you know, women of the night. Very, like, because his mom was one. So he's very, like, aggressive and hateful and stuff like that.
That makes
sense.
That makes sense.
You know?
Okay. That's a good catch. Good catch.
I got you.
That's why we talk about it, you guys. You gotta talk. Yeah. You need a gore friend to watch movies with so you can talk about it, because if there's something you missed, they probably caught it.
Yeah, so I think Paris is probably supposed to be his mom, quote unquote, like modeled after his mom. I think Tim's parents were what he wanted, possibly,
which is probably why all the guys were kind of attracted to her too, because in a weird way, like, guys have a weird thing with their moms, or they just, like, idolize them, or they're just such a prominent figure in their lives that they just can't handle them not being a good person. Like, so they kind of put their mom on this pedestal and expect them to be a certain way. And so all the personalities are, like, drawn to Paris. Like, if you notice, Rhodes was like all up in her grill when she was at the vending
machine.
Trying
to spit
game. Like, bro, that's how I knew he wasn't a real cop. I was like, how are you just gonna, like,
spit game?
Yeah, like all up in her grill, like trying to get laid while you have a convict in your room. That didn't make sense to me. You know, how are you gonna leave a convict in your room by themselves? Like, a real cop would have been more concerned and, like, stayed in the room with him, I would think. To make sure his guy didn't escape. Like, he even closed the door and let him be by himself. Like, but anyway, that's that on Lent.
So yeah, I think that was my reach, my parent, my site. Yeah, Mars's reach.
Also, Ed didn't know the actress had a cell phone. He kept bugging people about, oh, no one has a phone, no one has a phone. You've been driving this actress for, you know, some miles.
Oh, like, didn't he ask for the phone in the beginning? That's why he busted her windows open, right? When they first got to the hotel.
I mean,
because he was like, oh, let me see your cell phone. She was like, no. And he busted it out. And she was like, it's dead, I guess. But I mean, even if they got signal, like, she was having trouble.
It wasn't even, like, yeah, I know, but, I mean, they could have gone to the roof or something. Like, that's another FF. It's like, if she was starting to get bars, she should have, like, told someone, like, hey. Yeah, I know, that's the FF.
Yeah, that's the FF.
Like,
selfish.
You're not in a scenario where you can, you know, afford to not, you know, it's just, there's a woman dying. Like, there's just too much going on. The fact that Larry shouted, who escaped? Now he's just running around free. That's an F up, because, like, now you're creating hostility. You're creating mass panic and hysteria. Ed and Rhodes, they're going to find a way to, like, break it to them without, you know, causing panic. Or maybe not tell them. I don't know. They it seemed like Ed had a plan.
Yeah.
And Larry just shat all over it.
Yeah.
Because that's what Larry does.
He does. Just shits all over everything. It makes me laugh.
My biggest FF is the existence of the entire character, Jenny. Like her whole existence mm-hmm. is an FF. Why even make a personality like Jenny? Like, what good is she?
Yeah,
she did nothing other than create a red herring and make sure that Lou died. Like, Lou wouldn't have died.
Yeah, and that's crazy. Like,
you heard him talking to someone, so you know he's not alone. It went quiet, and now he's sounding hysterical, like open the door. And I didn't get a vibe that there was a history of domestic abuse in their relationship. Obviously Jenny has some manipulation issues, mm-hmm. so I didn't get the vibe that Lou was ever abusive toward her. So the fact that she's like, you know, oh, I'm not pregnant, I lied, and then she ran away, and he's like, oh, hell no, Jenny, get back here, and she's like, not until you calm down. It's like, you gotta talk about it, you can't just drop a bomb like that and not talk about it, and she's in the bathroom crying, not until you calm down. It's like, girl, you were gonna be in that bathroom whether or not he was calm. You have serious emotional issues.
Yeah,
he spent a good chunk of the movie saying, I don't want to be here, I need to get out of here. And it's like, yeah, it sucks that you're there, but where are you gonna go? Her character was just seemed really weak to me, and mm-hmm, it's,
I agree,
it's hard for me to, I can't vibe with characters that I can't get down with mm-hmm. that emotional manipulation and the weakness on her part. It's like, why not just leave Lou if that's the case? But maybe she had some other traits that Malcolm's mom had when it came to attachment to men and mm-hmm. staying with toxic men. I don't know. And Lou probably did cheat, honestly.
That's what I think, too. I was like,
looking at Paris.
Yeah.
As soon as he saw Paris, he's like, so how you think? He was spinning
game in front of her. He was like, oh, you're from the...
Then I'm also thinking that, you know, they're showing how it looks to Jenny. Like, there's everything is emphasized because Jenny is already, like, paranoid about her relationship and insecure about, you know, him cheating and whatnot. But at the end of the day, if you're that insecure about it, why lie to him and marry him? Like, just leave.
Drama. Toxic.
Jenny was unnecessary drama.
Yep, I agree.
And then also, if it wasn't for the fact that Timmy was, you know, ultimately the killer, why was he standing in the road? I'm like, I wouldn't. All right, I know you haven't seen it, but there's an anime. It's my favorite anime of all time, Yu Yu Hakusho. And this whole thing happened just like Yu Yu Hakusho. Because the first episode, the main character dies because he's trying to save a kid from getting hit by a car. And he finds out after the fact that even if he didn't jump in the street, the kid wouldn't have gotten hit by the car. And he would have, like, walked away with, like, some minor scrapes, but he would have mm-hmm. been good and the car would have missed him. And they're like, basically, you wasted your life. Like, your death is for nothing. And I felt that way about freaking, what's his name, George. Because mm-hmm. I was like, he didn't even make it to Timmy, right? Yeah. And then the car didn't even, he swerved. He wasn't going to hit him. That's why he hit the wall, because he swerved and missed Timmy. So George just ran out there and got hit for no reason.
Yep.
I'm like, yep. Timmy's not gonna get hit today, sir. He wasn't even, that car didn't even look like he was gonna hit Timmy. Timmy's not gonna risk getting hit because he's trying to kill all y'all.
Yep.
So I, but yeah, I was just like, George, you did not need to, I understand he was like, you know, trying to do the right thing, but he did, it was unnecessary. It was unnecessary. I feel like that's all of my F-ups, but I feel that there's just, this whole movie is just an F-up.
Like,
because like you said, Genesis, they should have just gave him the death sentence.
Oh, okay, like, but you were going to be like, oh, this is a waste of time.
Like, real life, people don't, you know, people usually sit on death row for years, right? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're convicting a guy that's, you know, innocent, right? They're... Mm-hmm. They know for sure that he did it, and they don't know which of the personalities is the killer. So how can you ensure that exactly. The personality that did the killing is dead? They're completely reliant mm-hmm. upon Ed. And mm-hmm. I was reading some trivia, and Ed and Rhodes had an exchange at the end, right as they were dying, where Rhodes was kind of mouth the words, I didn't do it, and Ed was like, I know you didn't. And so he knew it was Timmy, but Rhodes had popped off and
mm-hmm.
he had to be dealt with. That's all I can say. My boy John Cusack had to deal with him. So that was unfortunate. But yeah, it's like, look, now the only surviving personality is the killer, and so it's like, what are you guys gonna do now? So I just thought it was just kind of ridiculous, because it's like, even if you guys save this dude from being put on death row, he's gonna spend his whole life institutionalized. Like, what kind of life mm-hmm. is that? And also, that costs a lot of money for the state to like
that's a whole business.
Yeah, that's a whole thing.
It's a different podcast. It's a
whole thing. Whole thing. So I'm like, just, you know, let him go. Yeah. So the whole movie was an effort on everyone's part.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into what makes it a horror movie and what are the themes.
Ooh, what makes it a horror movie? It's a slash. Just from a viewer standpoint, it's a slasher. You know, one location. People are getting popped off. What makes it a horror movie? You know, being in a location with a certain amount of people and one of them's a killer and you don't know who it is. And things weird are happening, like bodies are disappearing and it's freaking sketchy, man. So that's for the most part what makes it scary. And themes. Well, themes are, I had issues picking up themes. I don't know. I'm interested to hear what your take on is for the themes, really.
For me, I mean, you hit all the main points of what makes it a horror movie, with it being a whole psychological thriller, and it is a bit of a slasher, but for the themes, I'd have to do a story's reach, because ooh, there's no obvious theme for this movie. The only thing I can kind of think of is that it has a lot to do with like trauma and how people deal with trauma and how mental health isn't taken very seriously, because the judge was just ready to like write off the guy, like mm-hmm. yo, why are you wasting my time? Mm-hmm. Like, he killed people, just lock him up. And it shows that the system isn't really for rehabilitation, which is what the jail system was originally supposed mm-hmm. to be for. Prison was supposed to be to rehabilitate people so that they could one day reconnect to society. And also, I don't know, I feel like mental institutions are pretty much a joke. And they just, they're just like, oh, we just, you know, can you imagine like the accreditation and the money that these doctors would get if they were able to prove, oh, we rehabilitated this guy, we got him to kill off his deadly personalities and got him off death row. Like, I don't feel that there was really anything genuine about them wanting to do this for whatever reason. I don't know if it was the writing or it's just my personal views, but yeah, I just feel like it was an experiment. When I say him, I'm speaking about Matthew Rivers, you guys. Malcolm Rivers, my bad. Malcolm Rivers, he's the guy's head that we're all in for this episode. So, yeah, that's what I have to say on that.
Stories reach.
Stories reach. Yeah, trauma, mental health, not being taken seriously. There's a lot of existentialism going on where, you know, we encounter these movies a lot in horror, now that I think about it, where people think they have a life that they can control and that's, you know,
those of their own will. Those typically be our, like, favorite movies on the show.
And then they find out that their whole life is nothing, essentially. Yeah. Like, so it's like, what's the... I felt that hit even harder with Rhodes, not Rhodes, Ed's backstory with that girl and her saying, you know, why should I live? Like, why bother living? And he couldn't think of anything. It's because he hasn't lived. He's not even real. Like, how can he know the meaning of life or what there is to look forward to when he doesn't even really have one? So it's really... it's deep. Existentialism hit hard, yo. Imagine processing that you're just here to like get someone through trauma and you're not you're not even a real person. You don't have a history. You can't remember anything past your career and today. Like, that's crazy. That has me shooketh. Like, that would be crazy. Anyway. See those reaches. Those reaches. I'd be thinking about this all day. So, what is your relationship status, Mars?
Oh, my mom owned it. I need a copy of my own. So, I guess, put a ring on it, I guess. Like, nice. I can watch this anytime. It's a great movie to show other people. It's a great movie to talk about with others. If it's on TV, you know, I'm like, oh, Identity. Yeah, where is it? Yeah, I'll watch the rest of it. It's just a great, fun watch, I think, for me. Definitely ring on it.
For me, also, I forgot to mention earlier, I feel like it should have been obvious for the doctors who the killer was, because Timmy is literally Malcolm. Like, he... his dad walked out on him and his mom, and then, you know, he didn't speak. It seems like Malcolm doesn't ever really speak. You're always hearing from his personalities, but it's like, when does Malcolm come out? You know, I don't think we ever met Malcolm officially. We've only dealt with his personalities. So, and he's a little boy, which is when his trauma started. So I thought, why, you know, that was a huge F up on the doctor's part, where it's like, how do you not know that the little boy is the murderous one? That's essentially Malcolm. That's the embodiment of all of his trauma. And, you know, so, my relationship status isn't put a ring on it, but I do have a lot of respect for this movie and baby daddy John Cusack, my emo baby daddy Ed. So I would say it's a I would say we're like a an on again, off again, like it's an ex that, you know, I just can't resist sometimes. Like we'll fool around and hook up here and there, you know. But nice. I know I don't need them to be a constant in my life. I just, you know, it's the toxicity of it all. It's just
toxicity. Got it.
Yeah. I can't leave emo baby daddy alone.
Yeah, like, that's why I'm like, I'm keeping him in my life. Let's, you know,
but I don't need him every day. I don't think I would purchase it just because I don't think I would watch it that much, but I appreciate it. And if somebody else was like, hey, I'm gonna watch this, I'd be like, okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind it at all. So yeah, it's definitely entertaining, guys. I definitely recommend. I'd give this movie like a 7 out of 10.
Yeah,
like it's pretty,
it's very underrated. So yeah, hopefully, you know,
you really feel the time difference with the whole cell phone bit
too. Yeah, like, you're like signals and
wouldn't be me though. Big ass brick phone with an antenna.
Lou no didn't signal. Have a cell phone. I'm like, how do you guys not have a cell phone?
Yeah, that's another thing. Lou talking all that mess in the car like they had a phone.
Oh my God.
Like you don't even have a phone and you're talking about, okay, but like who are you? Like why would we give you Lou our phone? You don't even have one, bro. Like it doesn't even matter. It doesn't pertain to you because you don't even have one. Like being extra, trying to be a man and stuff.
Oh my God.
And I love how Ed kept like putting Lou and Jenny in this box, like in their place by calling them kids the whole time. The whole movie he was like, yeah, the kids.
Your
like,
girlfriend.
The girlfriend. That's my wife as okay. of 9 hours ago. Okay, Lou. I love that John, Ed, I can't even differentiate anymore. I just love that he was like, yeah, the kids, kid, and like, what you gonna do? You're a freaking kid acting stupid little punk. Anyway. That's the show, you guys. Have a great day. That's the show. We're gonna go to a musical break. I literally had like two sentences written on my notes and didn't know if we'd make a full episode out of this. But look at us. Look at us go. Look at us go. Because most of it was a rant.
Oh, God.
And our love for John Cusack.
That was great.
Okay, we're going to give you guys a music break as a reward for sitting through that. And then we'll come back with some businessy stuff in our Sounds Like a Horror Movie.
Ooh.
right, let's get into this final segment. Mars is going to do some businessy stuff when she's ready. Mm-hmm. And three, I always wanted to do that.
Oh, God. Oh, hey, you guys. Really hope you enjoyed our musical break. I know we did. So we're going to hop into our businessy stuff now. You guys already know the deal. Social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Gore Friends. We're really active on there now, posting movie scenes and trivia and all sorts of good stuff on there. So check us out on Instagram. We're also on Twitch, you guys. I just forgot about that and remembered. Monday nights at what time do we do that? Like, 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Catch us live on Twitch. We watch like short horror films on YouTube, have horror movie discussions, all that good stuff. Talk to us in real time. It costs nothing to make a Twitch account. I don't know if you need to make a Twitch account to really watch us, but check us out. We're Gore Friends, lowercase, on Twitch. And then we have a email, which is gorefriendspodcast@gmail.com. We have a Google Voice number, which you can call, leave a voicemail with some kind words, recommendations, or your own. Sounds like a horror movie. And that phone number will be in the voice in the show notes of this episode. We're on iTunes as well. So if you guys want to go ahead and leave a 5-star review or a written review, we really, really appreciate it. It helps us get, you know, higher on the charts, and it helps more people to find us as well. And last, well, not last but not least, but we're on Patreon. We're on Patreon. We have 3 tiers, $1, $5, and $10 a month with various perks. Our $5 tier is the most popular. It has Gore Friends TV, in which we cover, it's the Gore Friends show, but we're covering horror TV shows. And this season, we're covering Haunting of Hill House, so really, really fun stuff there. We do have merch, and with our $10 tier, actually, you get discounts with our merch store. So go ahead and check out our Patreon, help support the show, and, you know, help our production go up and all that stuff. We really appreciate it. And last but not least, if you're a musical artist and you want your music featured on the show, go ahead and hit us up on any of the avenues that I mentioned. And if we vibe with it, we'll play it on the show for free. So
for free?
Oh, yeah, for free. Of course, for free. Always.
I don't believe it.
Yep. All right, you guys, so this week's story time is from Monica, a patron. Love you, Monica. Thank you so much for your support. So I'm going to go ahead and read her little story time. She says, I am way behind in listening to the episode, so I just listened to Black Christmas. I love that episode, by the way. When you were talking about how Debussy Nash just didn't get it when Barb was talking about fellatio, it made me think of a story from when I was working as a sex crimes prosecutor in a large metropolitan area in the early 2000s. My boss told us a story about a time when she had had to brief the actual elected country prosecutor about the rape case. The elected guy was probably 50, a Vietnam vet, but had never been much of a trial lawyer, and he was much more a politician than anything. He asked my boss, as she was talking about the case, Cindy, were there any fellatio involved? But he pronounced it fellatio. Not missing a beat, my boss told him, no, Rick, there wasn't any fellatio, and pronounced it correctly. The county prosecutor turned red and quickly told my boss to just use her best judgment as he rushed her out of his office.
Wow. Yep.
That's funny. Yeah, so that's a callback to our Black Christmas episode. Definitely take a listen to it. People don't know what fellatio is.
Fellatio.
I'm going to start saying that now. Fellatio.
It sounds like the more, like, PG version of fellatio. Like, Fellatio. That sounds nice and wholesome.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened in Black Christmas. So good. Thank you, Monica, for that submission. So like we mentioned, you guys, you can hit us up in anywhere you can send us a message, and we'll definitely see it. Even Facebook's a little bit iffy sometimes. Like, their notification systems gets a little wonky on there, but we will see it eventually. But yeah, thank mm-hmm. you, Monica, for the submission.
And you can always like write on our, like a post on our wall if you want on Facebook, because mm-hmm. we'll mm-hmm. definitely see that right away, because sometimes messages lag on the notifications, yeah. but I do my best to check them regularly.
She's better than me.
But yeah, it's literally only because I use Facebook for work, but it's like, oh, while I'm here. But yeah, you guys should definitely send more submissions, because I was ready to go to life science today.
I was like, wait, we got something.
Life science. It's time. They still haven't learned. They'll send a submission. Got to go to life science. You guys keep sending submissions, and let your friends and family know mm-hmm. to send submissions too, because even if they don't listen to us, they can share a story, or yeah. you can share it for them.
Yep.
So that would be Coolio. And Mars, do you have anything else you'd like to say to the good people of Gore Gang?
I love you guys so much. You guys should know this already, but I just like expressing it. I like expressing my emotions, and I love you guys. I really appreciate it. I love the show. I love being on it. It's feels real nice to get back into the groove of things and back to reviewing things. And yeah, I really want you guys to jump in on Twitch with us. Really fun times last week. So come by and say hi and watch some weird horror movies with us.
Yes, please do. It's a great time. Who knows, we might do some pop streams once in a while where we Ooh. Just decide to pop in and say hello and mm-hmm. talk to the good people of Gore Gang Nation.
Yes.
So stay tuned for all that's to come, you guys, and we love you, Gore Gang. Bye.